You're listening to the Carol Cox Show on 1080 AM K108. And the reason why we have Stevie Wonder singing Happy Birthday this morning, on this Sunday morning, it's Carol Cox's 100th show, 100th Sunday show, that is, right here on K108, and we welcome Carol Cox. Hi, Carol. Happy birthday.
Yeah, thank you, and thank all the listeners for putting up with us over there and out there. So, don't know where to start. There's so much I left off last week, but what I do have is I have Marty Townsend of Kahea, an environmental organization here in Honolulu or in Hawaii, who they do some very good work. And while most of us are asleep and or being spoon-fed, whatever it is that the papers and our politicians are telling us, you actually have a bigger watchdog out there called Kahea, and they deal with quite a few issues, and they're on top of things. And before that, though, I'm going to get to last week we had a caller named Dave, and Dave wanted to know what percentage, if any, that the HECO, Hawaiian Electric Company, used palm oil. And so I contacted HECO, and Mr. Peter Rozic is willing to call in for a couple of minutes and tell us all about the palm oil use and its future use and what is what it has for the future for us. Good morning, Peter. Are you there? And thanks for calling.
I am. Good morning to you.
Yeah, as I said, you may have heard me say last week one of our callers called in wanted to know what was the amount of palm oil being used at the facilities at your plants. Can you speak to that?
Sure. At the moment, we are not using palm oil in any of the Hawaiian Electric generating facilities. That means Hawaiian Electric here on Oahu, Maui Electric on Maui, and Hawaiian Electric Light Company on the Big Island. We are, however, planning to do an experimental run probably at our Kahea plant here on Oahu to see what percentage of palm oil. We can mix with our low sulfur fuel oil and still get the efficiency and heat that we need out of our generators as part of our ongoing effort to reach the state's very aggressive goals of 40% renewable electricity by 2030. So we will be importing some palm oil. But it's very important to remember that we have a long-standing agreement now with the Natural Resources Defense Council, and we've set up certain guidelines for any kind of biofuel imports or even for local biofuels to make sure that they're sustainably grown, to make sure that they are not causing further environmental degradation or human rights violations. So any biofuel, whether it's biodiesel, which we're buying for our new plant, or palm oil in the future, whether it's from imported or from local sources, are going to have to meet those guidelines. And we are also, incidentally, part of what's called the Roundtable on Sustainable Palm Oil, which is an international organization that sets standards for what kinds of palm oil may or may not be called sustainable, and it's international, involves pretty much every level, from the growers to the users and so forth. So that's the status at the moment, but it will change probably before the end of the year a bit.
And what is the majority of your plants use? What type of fuel? That was the other question.
Sure. Except for one plant here on Oahu, which is not owned by us, but owned by another company from which we buy electricity, and our new plant, all the electricity generators in our service territory use some kind of oil product. Here on Oahu, it's mostly what's called low sulfur fuel oil, which is something like bunker fuel. It's left after the process of taking out the jet fuel, taking out the gasoline, and other products from a barrel of crude oil. On Maui, most of the generation there is diesel fuel, and of course they also get some renewables. But in terms of our generators, the oil, it's pretty much oil based, which is part of the reason why we are working very hard to find alternatives for oil. Biodiesel in our new plant here on this island, we're looking to biodiesel the units on Maui and on Hawaii Island. So we just recently put out a request for proposals for companies that will grow the feedstock, whether it's plants or algae or whatever, locally. We'll locally grow the plants and the feedstocks and provide us biodiesel on any of our islands.
All righty. Any hot tips for the consumers out there that HECO would like to share real quickly?
Well, we're always trying to help people to use electricity wisely. So that means, in our quest for a cleaner environment here and a cleaner energy source, energy efficiency and conservation are always the fastest, easiest, and best because they can save money to the consumer. So look around your house for opportunities to turn things off. Power strip your computers and things like that so that you can turn them all off at the same time. One thing that takes a lot to in aggregate, if you look at the whole island, one thing that takes a lot of energy is we leave a lot of things plugged in, our chargers, our computers, our printers, and so forth. And most of those are taking electricity all day long, whether we're using those devices or not. So after you charge that cell phone or PDA or whatever, unplug the plug so that it isn't continuing to take electricity. And if you'll put all your computer stuff on a power strip so that you can actually turn off the power, not just let them go to sleep, you'll be probably saving yourself some money and contributing to the welfare of everybody around.
Okay. Well, thank you, Peter. And anytime you have any tips or any concerns, give us a call here. We'd be happy to
Same to you. If you get questions, we're always ready to try to answer to the best of our ability.
And how does the public contact the public information number for things like this?
Well, I would recommend starting at HECO.com, which has got an awful lot of information. We also have, including, for example, posted on HECO.com, is our annual sustainability report, and I think that would probably be of the most interest to your listeners. And it's you can see from year to year what we're generating, how we're generating it. For example, this question about, you know, what our generators use is all answered there, including lists of all the renewable sources as well, which I didn't get into. You know, on Hawaii Island, there's a lot of wind power. On Maui Island, there's biomass and wind. Here on Oahu, we have H power. We didn't, you know, talk about those. So those are all described. And if you go to HECO.com, you'll find a lot of information. And the other place to start is HawaiiEnergyFuture.com, which really goes into the renewable aspect and the things we're doing on each island to try to reduce our use of fossil fuel and improve our work to meet that renewable portfolio standard of 40% by 2030.
Okay. Hey, one question then.
Sure.
Real quickly, Dave, are you there?
Yeah, by the way, thank you so much for finding this out.
Keep it short for me now, David. I got... Okay. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, thank you for finding out all this stuff and having your special guest there. But is he still on the line?
I'm here.
Oh, good. Yeah, I was always wondering. I mean, I know this is very anti-environmental, but why haven't Hawaiian Electric ever... coal. I would think coal. I mean, don't they have a little sulfur coal too? Wouldn't that be less expensive? I know you have to barge out here, but
okay,
even then,
David,
I mean,
David, that, I appreciate you calling, but as I say, that's taking me on a whole different thread here. Real quickly, can you answer that, Peter?
Just sure. There is one, what we call an independent power producer here on Oahu that uses coal, and this is a plant that's now getting to be about 15 or 20 years old. You know, at the time, it seemed like a good idea to diversify from oil. Coal can be, is a domestic product, not an import, imported product, and so it represents some savings. I don't think today people look at coal quite the way they did 15 years ago. So I don't think we'd be moving forward on coal. We want to get off fossil fuels entirely and getting, going in the direction of coal, even what's called clean coal, and we could have a 10-hour argument about whether there is such a thing as clean coal. It's not the way we want to go here. We want to go to renewables. We want to go to energy efficiency. So we're just not looking in that direction any longer.
Okay. Hey, thank you. And if later on we have questions, we'll talk with Dave and everyone. But I appreciate you calling.
Absolutely. Anytime, Phil.
Aloha.
Take care.
Aloha. All righty. Didn't want to sound abrupt, but if you don't say let's contain it, we'll be all over the place, and then we'll want to know this and that. Not that we don't want to know that, but today I got Marty sitting on the phone. And Marty, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. Sorry about that. Again, Marty Townsend is with me from Kahea, environmental organization here. And Marty, I think you could do better by telling us all the good things you guys do and where you stand for, and how people can contact you. And also, people, they work hard for you out there. So if you got extra money or want to donate something to Kahea, please hop in and get involved because they do good work. So go ahead, Marty, and tell us about yourself and tell us about Kahea, if you would.
Well, thank you very much for that endorsement. I really appreciate it. So Kahea, the Hawaiian Environmental Alliance, is a non-profit organization. We are a Hawaiian-led organization that works on issues that intersect with environmental protection and cultural perpetuation. So things that have to do with cultural practice and protecting the environment, like protecting the sacred summit of Mauna Kea, for example, from industrialization.
Mm-hmm.
We help to establish the protections for the Northwest Hawaiian Islands, now the Papahanaumoku Colosseum, Marine National Monument. We've also worked on things like trying to protect taro from genetic modification,
mm-hmm.
Protecting shorelines and ocean protection, as well as public access, because access to natural resources is fundamental to perpetuating traditional Native Hawaiian practices.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty much the gamut. We also have started an environmental justice program working out in Waianae,
mm-hmm.
on issues related to landfills and public health just everything from health of the oceans to, you know, health of the food that's being grown there, making sure that ag lands aren't misappropriated for industrial uses, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're interested in learning more about some of the issues that we work on, our website is kahea.org. That's www.kahea.org.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm the program developer there. I grew up on the leeward coast of Oahu, went to Moalua High School, and I graduated from UH Law School with an environmental certificate in 2005. And since then, I've been working on policies and programs for Kahea.
Mm-hmm.
And we're a very small outfit. We've got 2.5 staff people, and we work on all islands. And in addition to sort of our standard issues that we've been working on for a while now, we also help out a lot of community groups and just, you know, providing advice and insight and things like that. So
mm-hmm.
There's so much work out there to be done, and we're just doing our best to try to, like, lend our hands to the effort.
And you welcome donations, as I said earlier, right?
Oh, yes. We don't accept any corporate funds
okay.
or federal funds. So we rely quite heavily on private donations.
Mm-hmm.
And if people are interested in donating, our website has a button dedicated for donations. So you can just click on that, and you can give securely online, or you can send us a check in the mail.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a tax-free donation.
Yeah, I hate that term, the checks in the mail. Let's just get you guys a good donation out there, listeners, and help, because what you see that is beautiful today, they're actually out there working day and night, and I can attest to that and tell you how hard it is to just to get a document to convey to you what is going on behind the scenes. We have to pay for it, so and they're quite active. So anyway, but you know, Marty, we had talked earlier, and there's some recent news articles, and especially on coral, and specifically here in the Kaneohe Marine, Kaneohe Bay area, and looking at that was Dr. Greta Abbey, and at the HIMB, the Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology, and I wanted to talk about and lay out some history about this. They just recently put in for permits. Can you take us back? And tell us, because we saw her in the newspaper, and I did interview her, and I'll be writing something. But can you share with the public a little background, and then I'll share some basic concerns I have with that, and hopefully can shine light on the coral recent, quote, emergency outbreak of coral illnesses.
Okay. Everyone think back, 2005. This is before the monument was established. The state decided that, you know, we went through a drawn-out rulemaking process, and we finally were able to establish the strongest marine protection area in the state of Hawaii, and arguably anywhere in the world. The Northern Hawaiian Islands were set aside as a state marine refuge, and it was a no-take zone. You weren't allowed to fish, you weren't allowed to take anything at all. And the idea was supposed to be that the beauty and whatever pristine natural environment was left in this ecosystem, we collectively decided to leave it alone, to set it aside and let it grow and be healthy. This last predator-dominated ecosystem, one of the last in marine environment, and it's got some of the rarest coral habitats.
Mm-hmm.
Full water, deep-sea, cold water corals, as well as, amazing, fascinating reef corals and shoreline corals. And so the summer after the state had decided to institute these very strict regulations, the Hawaii Institute for Marine Biology set off on what it called the Census of Marine Life. And their goal was to just collect absolutely anything and everything so that they could document it. And the permit that they got to go up there allowed them to take thousands upon thousands of samples. And we were very, very concerned about this. And so we lobbied hard before the Board of Financial Resources via a lot of testimony and got some very strict conditions put on their permit, so that if and when they did collect something, we could ensure that it caused the least amount of harm possible. One of the researchers on that voyage, and there were probably, 50 people on this gigantic, 50 researchers on this gigantic cruise research vessel. And one of them, Greta Abey, was researching disease coral, and the thing that she was trying to assess was how, what are the visual cues to tell whether a coral is diseased or not. So before it actually gets to the point where it's completely dead, what can we do to identify visually whether it's diseased or not? Because at this point, you really can't tell it's either dead, or you take it back to the lab and you run some tests and you can tell that it's sick. Mm-hmm. So she had collected several pieces of coral, then put them in a bucket on board the vessel, and she had an open water flow system, and so water was coming up a tube out of the ocean into the bucket, and then out of the bucket back into the ocean.
So an open system where pathogens and bacteria and what have you could come, be taken out of the ocean and then flow right back into the ocean, correct?
Right, exactly. So it's just a complete flow-through system. And this is really problematic. That's one of the main things that we were concerned about in trying to have conditions put on these permits, that we didn't want whatever research is being done on the vessel to contaminate the natural environment.
Mm-hmm.
And so after she collected these specimens, and though she has testified that they were healthy, we all noted that they were taken from areas where disease is known to happen amongst corals, and that we don't know how to visually identify whether a coral sample is diseased or not yet. So we don't know for sure whether it was diseased, and actually, it was, you know, when you're in those kinds of conditions, you need to assume that it is diseased. So she has these corals in this large bucket. Water's flowing, free-flowing from the ocean to her bucket and back into the ocean, and the vessel sets sail, and they go between several islands in the Northwest Point Islands, and this water is being allowed, this used water is allowed to dump over the side of the boat. And in addition to that, she was collecting samples of these of actual disease corals and packaging them alive to take back to Oahu, to Coconut Island in Paniwa Bay. And that was also a violation of conditions that we had put on the permit for the Boardland Natural Resource. We didn't want anything alive to be brought back because we could not maintain, be sure that it would be contained. Some people may know that research at the HIND facility at Coconut Island actually resulted in disease outbreaks in coral in the past. And so we're very concerned about repeating history.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, this researcher tried to package live coral specimens, disease specimens, and bring them back. So she was confronted by her superiors on the vessel. She was basically cited for the flow-through system and also cited for the coral disease specimens. And she was told to destroy all of them, and there was a lot of controversy over this. This happened in the summer of 2006, I think, and the public didn't hear about it until January of 2007. And it was, there was several different efforts made to do an enforcement action for these violations.
Mm-hmm.
Normally, the staff at the Division of Aquatic Resources, they do an investigation and they put forth a suggested fine and whatever, based on whatever the law requires, whatever kinds of penalties are allowed by law. And under the refuge regulations that were passed in 2005, that were signed into law, if you have one violation, you're not allowed to return to the state refuge. So the enforcement action that was finally presented suggested a $1,000 fine and didn't mention anything about whether she would be allowed to return to the refuge in the Northwest Point Islands.
Right.
She contested this There was a separate case hearing. Once the hearing officer admitted Pahea as a party to the contested case, so there was HIV researcher represented by the University of Hawaii's attorney. There was Attorney General representing Division of Product Resources. And then we had our attorney representing us. And we were concerned because we didn't feel that the Division of Aquatic Resources was really pushing the, really fully implementing the refuge regulations to ensure that these strict protections were really upheld. And so once we were admitted as a party in this contested case, HIV folded. They withdrew the contested case request. They paid the fine and accepted responsibility for the penalties.
Mm-hmm.
Since then, there have been, I think, three attempts to get this particular researcher up to North Hawaiian Islands, either on her own permit or as support staff on other people's permits.
Right.
And so far, she hasn't been allowed to return. She does have a permit before the Board of Financial Resources right now. That permit was deferred on Thursday, but can be brought back in time. That vessel is set to set sail on May 10th.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things I'd like to share with the listeners, if you have access to the computer, do you have that report, Marty, on your website that you folks did about? It's about a 28-page document.
Mm-hmm.
How would they go there, and what would they look for? Because I really believe that if the public and the listeners saw the work that you guys put into this, they would really be. I was impressed, and I'm a digger and a scratcher, and a muckraker. You were, I say it arose above my ability, and that it is absolutely, it's detailed, and I see why the HIMB folded. They didn't have, you didn't leave any playing room. I felt like calling you Marty the henchman. She wants to get on you. A true watchdog. I mean, but it's good that the state agencies and the other agencies, and reading that, and I had also met with some resistance and requesting those documents when this went on. And they, some of them just flat out told me I'm not getting them. But then you guys were able to get them, and you did an awesome job in documenting. And but one of the things that I had a question about, as I mentioned earlier, the news article in the Honolulu Advertiser, what caught my interest was that here's Dr. Greta Abbey speaking about what is a rapid response team, and that the article also said that there was this emergency. And I'm thinking, but I don't see the DLNR anywhere mentioned in this article. So you would think if a scientist discovered something, in my layman opinion, that they would have incorporated or notified or met with the state agency or the federal agencies and convened a meeting to come up with the plan of attack and a response to this, quote, emergency. But the article was absent of any of that notice. So that got me. And then I didn't realize that as I started looking, well, not only is this manufactured by HIMB or whomever, I'm now querying this and asking these questions, because after looking, I find out that they have permits still. We're going to be heard, what, on the 8th of April? To go back out to the Northwest Hawaiian Islands. Then I also found out that Governor Lingle earlier had vetoed a bill where HIMB wanted to use the resources of DAR, Department of Aquatic Resources, without any pay. And then there's another bill, HB 2200. So all of these things, and in my opinion, and what my concerns are, do we really, or did we really have a real threat? Or an outbreak or an emergency, because their actions didn't fit an emergency that I would normally respond to or how I would normally do it. So what can you shine, what light can you shine on that?
Well, you put a lot out there, so let's see what we can try and break apart here. So first, to start, We have been following this issue for quite a while, and part of the reason why we've been able to get those documents is because we were, you know, there at the time that they were produced, and so the regulators didn't know at the time that they should keep them away from us. So that's part of the advantage of that watch dogging model that you were talking about earlier, is that, you know, when you have an institution that can stay on something for a long time, you're able to be there at the right time to be able to get those kinds of critical documents. Because I agree, once they realize what they're talking about, they try very hard to keep the public away from it. So,
mm-hmm.
So that said, that we've been working together with a group of NGOs and individuals on this issue. People are concerned about coral reefs, staff from an environmental defense fund, volunteers with Sierra Club, individuals with Helio Coalition, and our own staff. And so between all of us working together, we were able to put together that document you were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
This is the one from August 2007, and it was an attempt to do a sort of like history up to now type of testimony to the Coral Reef Task Force that at that point was meeting in American Samoa.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a very important discussion at this time because people were looking to the North Point Islands as a place to do all of this very important, as they term, very important coral research. But we don't have the infrastructure, not just the regulations or the actual like equipment, you know, the ships themselves, to be able to do this kind of research safely without jeopardizing the actual environment that they say they're trying to save. When they're referring to the wet lab on the research vessel as a bacterial cesspool, where they were, scientists are trying to do experiments and they're having cross-contamination between the different experiments going on in that laboratory. And so we're very concerned about the way this kind of stuff is being conducted. And so that document from 2007 is sort of like a snapshot in time of those. And you can really see where we've come from since then to now with some of the advocacy, because at the time they really had a blind spot to their own impacts, the impact of research itself, even if it was done from, good intentions.
Hey, Marty, I got a caller that was asking, are you on speakerphone?
Yes.
Oh, okay, they can't hear. It's giving some distortion. You there?
How is this better?
Okay, I was just listening to all the good things you were saying. Thank you, caller. You see how they keep us in shape. That's why I love my Sunday mornings. There are some people out there who will hold you accountable. Anyway, thank you. But go ahead and appreciate the caller calling.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry to have made everyone suffer through that.
That's okay. We'll have you back.
Okay, so now, you skip forward and you realize that, you look at the Hawaii Institute for Marine Biology. They are appended to the University of Hawaii. They are a research institution, and their purpose is to get grants by any means necessary to be able to fund research. So they get federal money, private money, and they research any random question that needs to be answered. This doesn't make them managers, though. They aren't. Their purpose is not to protect the public trust. Their purpose is not to ensure that our resources are properly protected and managed. Their purpose is to research questions that we don't have the answer to. And so they, as valuable as the services that they provide, they aren't the body that's supposed to be making management decisions, such as is there a coral crisis or some sort of emergency that we need to be acting on. HIMB is a research institution, and they need to be regulated like any other user of our resources. We're concerned about things like bioprospecting, which is something that I think is a huge concern, especially for marine research. And we need to be concerned about things like the impact that research can have on the environment that it's researching. And it's up to the regulators, the Department of Land and Natural Resources and its Division of Aquatic Resources that are supposed to be providing that objective, bureaucratic enforcement of very straightforward rules. unfortunately, HIMB, because it has so much money, has been able to sort of manipulate this this relationship, and they are quickly putting themselves in the position of being the deciders about, one, what sort of management questions need to be answered, and two, what sort of management decisions need to be made. And it's really putting the cart before the horse, or having the tail wag the dog, or whatever kind of cliche you want to use. And that's where you have a situation where now you have the state budget saying, well, let's transfer 54% of the Division of Aquatic Resources budget to the Institute for Marine Biology. And I mean, some of this stuff is really egregious. If you the budget bill is House Bill 2200, and the latest draft that I know of is transfers, like I said, 54% of the Division of Aquatic Resources budget, and some of it is really egregious. Like they want to they want to transfer money to do for groundskeepers and security officers. And they want to, you know, this is really, we're talking about making basic management decisions, and they are taking that money to, you know, away from management and putting it towards security guards and, you know, all kinds of you know, things that aren't basic and have to do with enforcement.
Yeah, the problem there is, they want to take money from state agencies, which have been in place for many years, and it's going to water down what little efforts we have already. In fact, we should be increasing the budget in some of these instances. You there?
I totally agree. I mean, we're talking about, you know, the basis of what it takes to protect Hawaii, keep the things that we all love about Hawaii protected, and instead of actually putting our money towards that, we're talking about taking the money away from the institutes that are the bodies that are supposed to be protecting it and transferring it to a research institution for security guards and groundskeepers. This is just, it's totally backwards, and I think this is part of a larger conversation about people who are anti-government running government into the ground.
Right.
And, you know, you talk about, you know, the Republican way of privatizing everything, and especially the Lingle administration's approach towards privatizing things has really helped to erode the very basics of government services. Very basic public services are being lost because the Lingle administration would rather fund private money-making, and that's money for private individuals and not for the collective, not for the public, but money-making ventures, instead of actually putting money towards protecting our resources for the collective benefit. I mean, right now we have a protest going on at the Capitol because we don't have, you know, from the Save Our Schools 808 group, because the Lingle administration has, you know, cut basic public services to our public schools. And a furlough Fridays. At the same time, you have the Lingle administration backing things like the $1 a year leases for the use of public lands on Mauna Kea, also giving very, very cheap long-term ocean leases for open ocean aquaculture ventures. And these are privatization of our oceans. But instead of ensuring that the regulatory agencies that would oversee the protections of our oceans are fully funded, and can actually regulate these entities that want to use our oceans to make money, she's gutting them. And honestly, the Democrats are right there along with them. This latest version of the budget bill is all the Democratic Party made doing their best to make sure that government remains incapable of doing what it needs to do. You know, it's like people are complaining about the failures of the Department of Land and Natural Resources, and I am no one to be in the position of defending the Department of Land and Natural Resources, but you can't expect a division or a department to do what it's supposed to do if it doesn't have any funding at all. I mean, this is basically going to result in the closing of the Division of Aquatic Resources.
I believe that at the current pace, there we will not have a Department of Aquatic Resources housed under the DLNR. Land and Natural Resources, I think it'll come on the boating or something, because you got so many things occurring here, and we've raised many issues. As you said, the Democrats are sitting right alongside in the passenger seat, cheering Lingle on, apparently, Ken Ito. There's bills there. The public is calling, and he has, it's all falling on a deaf ear. He won't set a hearing. So if you people out there, think about voting somebody else in to protect your interests. I mean, young people like Marty and her organization are out there trying to work, and it can be discouraging when they find it, they understand it, they go to college and to interpret it for us, and then they bring it out and tell us about it, and we as old folks sit around and go vote them back in. So, you know, I think if we do care about the kids in the future, then and care about the INA, then we need to start voting smart. And I'm not advocating for a vote for anyone and who, but I can say at the current pace, the HIMB, this bill that was submitted, should never even seen the day of light, the light of day, I should say. And in other bills, and the privatization, I don't understand the logic how people can come into government and say that it's too small. Well, if you think government is too big, don't get in office. Mm. You know, go open a private business. But if you look, most of the people that preach all of that have never been successful. There's DeJoux, for example. I don't want to be political, but he says business, 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 but government's too big. Well, then go get a job. You step out and we'd have one less person in government. I mean, that's illogical if you really mean what you're saying, you see. So, and also for the Democrats, the same thing, you know. This place, they're taking pieces by pieces, and eventually paddlers now are having to pay $1,500. Just to enjoy what comes natural. And then we run out and says to the federal government, give us money so our kids won't be fat. You know, well, maybe if you open all the recreational areas. But anyway, there's something terribly wrong here. And what do you think is the fix? I'm always talking about don't vote them in and vote them out. But from a young person like you who's wiser and more familiar with the current ways, what do you think should be done?
You know, I wish I had sort of like the fix-all answer, but I don't. At the base definitely is political involvement. People need to be more involved directly. And by political involvement, I don't necessarily mean like, you know, working on someone's campaign, but just being aware of the issues, mm-hmm. Being able to look deeper at issues. I mean, I'm very concerned right now because, you know, the state of our current media is such that you can't actually give this kind of information except from, you know, people like you who are willing to put themselves out there on a Sunday morning and take time out of their personal lives and talk about this. You know, mm-hmm. Instead you have the consolidation of our commercial media. You know, now, you know, basically have three news stations. Maybe even just two, depending on how you look at it. Our newspapers are closing. There's the Hawaii Independent that's coming up that has done some really good investigative reporting. But it's really important for people to get involved and get informed, and you have to actually work at it. It's got to be something that you spend time doing. And then you need to get involved with decision makers. You should feel comfortable going down to the Capitol and talking to decision makers. They are regular people just like anyone else, and they have an obligation to you to ensure that they are acting on your behalf and not on the behalf of some other interests. And I think that's probably one of the fundamental problems of the system that we have now, is that we have decision makers who aren't acting on the behalf of the collective. They aren't acting on behalf of the public, and instead they are acting on behalf of key individuals, people who have, you know, empowered them either through financial donations or maybe through fear, like I will, you know, they have some sort of blackmail document, who knows, but the point is that you have quite a few officials, and I'm talking about state-elected representatives and senators as well as on the county councils, who aren't acting to protect the public trust. They are trustees, you know, the way Hawaii is set up. And the reason why people love to live here is because we are set up on a model of a public trust system. You know, this isn't about exploiting common resources for capital interest. That's not the model that we have. We are into collective survival. Mm-hmm. And it's only because the political system has allowed that to be eroded over time that we start to have the kinds of problems that we're having now, where kids can't go to school, fishermen can't access the shorelines, and our resources are being contaminated. If we were actually acting from a perspective of protecting all of our resources for the collective benefit, we would be having less of these problems.
Mm-hmm. How do I the public out there get the copy or access to Hawaii Independence? You have any idea?
Well, they have they're online, the HawaiiIndependent.com. And I think they do some random publications, just special editions and things like that. And they do some special events, First Friday in Chinatown and things like that. But they have a local-based model for reporting, so they do things based on regions, and so that people can get information that's really specific to their neighborhood, you know, Kaneohe or, you know, the Ewa Beach. And then you can also help other communities connect with each other because you can see all that's going on in another, you know, your neighboring Ahupua. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm really concerned with the things going on at Kaneohe Bay and those activities and the siltation pollution, not just what one individual or HIMB does, but also the pollutants and the commercial activity that seems to be on the rise out there in the bay. But one thing that I found, I got a report that there was a research vessel, a track vehicle, like we'll call it a bulldozer, that was being run in the water in the mud flats out there at Kualoa.
Mm.
And I went out there, and the people that were operating it was done under the Naval Research, no permits or anything, and it was done through the Navitec. They're affiliated with the Navitec. The vessel had an HA registered number, and it actually rolls back to the Navitec. But the alarming part is that it was on Kualoa Ranch property, or as the operator of that equipment informed me, that it was Mr. John Morgan who had given them permission to go through that and access the ocean. And there were neighbors that actually observed it and filmed it, but apparently they felt through political pressures they would not speak up. Or they had promised to give a copy of the video, but they decided not to. But nonetheless, that won't stop us. And we file a complaint, but imagine, out in the mud flats and over the sand dunes or the beach area and in the fish pond, driving around in a track vehicle that they're trying to develop for the military.
Hmm.
So,
yeah, and John Morgan is a member of the Board of Land Natural Resources.
Right. And so, I mean, here's this effort of privatization. I say to people, I think we ought to start to really do a test to see how privatization works. Let's privatize the governor's office. Let's privatize. Just start from three positions. Let's privatize Hanabusa's office at the senatorial head, and then let's privatize the Speaker of the House, Mr. Calvin Saith. Just those three, and let's see how it works. I think we should ask for federal funding to see if this really. To see if this theory works. If it's so good, they should be first to say, well, good, you know, I applaud you. We believe in privatization. But they know it don't work. What it is, it's farming out and raping the resources and passing it over their shoulders and stealing us blindly. When I say us, kids of the future, and we talk about how fragile and how beautiful Hawaii is, but I don't believe that it can continue to sustain itself and exist in the fragile quality as it is. And 10-20 years from now, I don't believe we'll have much of anything left.
Mm. Especially if we continue to use it as an experimental laboratory. You know?
Right.
Like, this is the place, the proving ground for all kinds of activities that are meant to benefit anyone but us, you know?
Yeah.
The way the open ocean aquaculture is being termed, like they're experimenting with different types of equipment so that they can, you know, export it to other places. The military comes and uses our oceans and our lands to experiment with bombings. Yeah, if we continue with this kind of model, no, we're not going to live much longer. I actually wanted to take your idea of privatization and use it on the other side. I was like, well, what happens if, I as a staff person for a nonprofit goes through and tries to get one of these $1 leases for public lands? Like, I want all the rest of Mauna Kea for $1. Yeah. I want all the rest of the oceans for $1. And if you're willing to give it to these private companies, why wouldn't you be willing to give it to me? Not to say that, our resources shouldn't be privately owned. They aren't owned by anyone. Right. They're owned by everyone. To sort of test that, the challenge, that model of privatization, that's a very good idea. Yeah. We were talking earlier about media and how,
coming down the wire. Go ahead, real quick.
Okay. Oh, the lack of media and... Mm-hmm. Just in terms of Kaneohe Bay and the HIMB researcher, I mean, the only reason why, one reason why this researcher could get away with saying, we have an emergency outbreak and I have a rapid response team, is because we didn't have a robust media to be able to really challenge what she was saying. They just published her press release, and she's busy trying to build up her own case for trying to get up to the North Hawaiian Islands because she has a bad record.
Right.
And so, without media sources willing to do that research to be able to find out what's really going on, investigate things, people are fed a line of information that's not completely accurate, or at least not complete.
Well, yep, you're right. Would you like to come on again in the near future? Okay, I'm going to extend the invitation now. You let me know when, and we'll do this again. And I appreciate it, Marty. This is Marty Townsend with Kahea. And real quick, what's your website, kahea.org?
So kahea.org.
Okay.
You can also email me at marti@kahea.org.
Okay, and thank you. I appreciate your time, and we will get back with you.
Thank you very much. So take care.
All righty. And this will be on podcast at carolcox.com, CarolCox.com. Thank you for joining me. And Tina Quizon, Pathways to Paradise and Global Entrepreneurs is coming up. And aloha. Thank you.
Listening, and tune in again next time for the Carol Cox Show on K108.
This is KWAI Honolulu 1080 on the AM.